Station number 9339, Reel 1.
Mr. William Holbrook, Reel 1. Could you tell me something about your life and background before the war?
Yes, well, when I was born, in the South Hornchurch, just not far from here, about 3 miles, 3-4 miles, South Hornchurch, November 1892. And my father, mother, and my mother was, I was the third one. The first child died, and I was the third. Well, we did. My mother, I can't remember much about. We have a small shop, and my father was worked on the farm, and she died when she was 26. She had TB, and I can just remember. I was about four, I suppose. And from then on, my mother's sister, who was living in the same area, she came to look after us, because an aunt, she was like a mother to us. We were all young, and. Of course, my father married the guy, he married her, so we didn't know anything, but she was my own mother. We can just remember my own mother. Though I still put flowers on her grave, and she's buried here, on her grave. Mother's up, I go and sleep on the grave, and she's buried in 1895. And anyway, my father married again, and we had four more. My mother, she had two more after me, one that died. My brother, earlier brother, who just died in Canada, and myself, my sister, and another brother. So there's four of us. My mother, she's only 26, she had five children, 26. And then we married again, we had three more, one girl and two more boys. So we're seven of us living. Well, when my father died, I went to school, a small school in, not far from here, it was only a one room place. And then he took small children, about five. I mean, there was about four, I suppose, it's called. And there's a lady there, a Miss Whedon. And obviously, she's not as strong as she was. And one day she came, I'd been there about 30 days, I think it's three. And she came up to me and said, Willie Holbrook, I've got something of yours. She said, oh, you kill him. I was afraid of it, really. And she came up and she got a brooch. And in this brooch was a locket golden curl. And she said, like a reddish curl. And she said, that was taken from your head, she said, about a year ago. And she said, well, get it. And also, many years ago, a woman came, just before I left the shop, a woman came to the shop, she said, I've got something of yours you'd like to see. She said, I've got another brooch. She got one. It was 45 years after, more than that. Anyway, I went from there to... On the way to school is a pub called The Good Intent, which is down the bottom here. And every morning we used to walk to school about 2 miles with the other children. And when we got to the pub, there was always two of me in there, two old boys with biddycock hats. So it was only like a wooden building this pub was then, because it's a magnificent place today. And these two old men would be sitting there on a form with a beer table outside in the kind of yard drinking beer. Before 9 o'clock in the morning, pints of beer on the table. Every morning they were there. And then we had in this little one room school, it was only about 25, 30 children, I suppose, a broken down chair it went inside. And there was a piece of string with a bell, a little bell. And the first one they used to have to pull his bell, you see. And we knew when it started, we were late for school, we used to have to run then to get to school before the bell stopped. Anyway, I was there about 3 years, I suppose. More than that, probably 3 or 4 years. And one afternoon, she was not a devil, so Miss Whedon was. We used to have the men the clothes. Many a time, she used to be in old calico knickers and things like that, and us kids used to mend them. We were teaching the slate pencils, slate stone, that's what we said at school. And one afternoon there, it was a very heavy thunderstorm at this place, and she used to live. The house next to the school is a passage between the little school and the house, and about a yard wide. Well, they had this heavy thunderstorm, and the house got struck by light in her house, and it came down, so they had to clear us out of the school. So we pulled their third floor in the pouring rain in the road next to the school. Was out in the rain. I can remember singing, "Oh, Miss Wheaton's house on fire." We clapped the man's tree on fire, but you know, please, us to see her burn up. Because we never went anymore there. I don't know what happened to her, but then I went to Blacksmith Lane School. It was over this way. They just they hadn't built that very long, still going strong now, modern school. And I was there till about, my father died when I was 10, or before I was 10, and the family, because my mother got 7 children, and she wasn't so wonderfully old. And we split up. I went to my uncle, as a policeman at Harwich in Essex, and my other elder brother went to an uncle of mine in London, and my sister went for Barking, aunt in Barking. So I left her with 4. And
so the family split up in 1902, would that be right?
Yes, about 1903. And she, of course, she left these 7 these children. So when I went there to, as I say, to Harwich, he's a policeman, like my uncle. And I suppose I was such a London nuisance, I was on my own there. I'd be with 7 boys and girls, you know, alive, they sort of home. And I suppose, so they struck me for 10 months, I remember. They couldn't sit me under, he's a policeman. They sent me home, I go back to South Orchard down here. So my mother, I came back on the Thursday or Friday this year, or same year really, and I had to go to school the next Monday, you see. Well, while I was at Harwich, Great Oakley, little village, while I was there, they sent to a church school, which was far above the school I was going to, quite a good school, but in that 10 months I did very well. Yeah. And when I went back to the other school, back home, I went on the Monday, and when I came back in the evening, I said, "Mother," I said, "they put me up the top of the class of school." "Top of the class?" She said, "Yeah." So she said, "Oh, it's no good you going there anymore." She said, "I can't teach anymore." She said, "Better stop going." So I didn't go anymore. I went back one day, and it was my brother and these 4 children. She had a terribly hard job. My brother and sister were still away, but that's 5 of us. So she applied then what they call parachute. She should go to work in the fields and taking washing and all that sort of thing. Wonderful woman. And she applied for what they call parish relief. Well, they only give this parish relief to children over a certain age. So she got 2 children a week for 2 of them. The younger 2 didn't get anything, but the 2 that was just going to school were 8 and 9. They got 2 children a week, and she had to walk from South Hornchurch, 4 miles, to Hornchurch village to pick up 2 shillings once a week. That's all she got. And then she had to pass with the 2 children. The other young one got nothing. So, of course, he had to live. But my father was I know you say that he worked on a farm, but he's more or less a very friend with the farmer who owned the farm. Mount Farm, really. There's Mount Farm over this way. So it had a big mount in it, a big mould in it. And then this mount, going a bit off it, you could go into a dark opening, and then there's an enormous hole, because you're going to go down there, there's a bar. And they told me, I know for sure, that the smugglers used that smuggling right to the river, smuggling underground. In that. I shouldn't be surprised, it was a very big, used for nothing else. Anyway, the farmer was very friendly of mine, and she's going to help. They helped us a bit. The farmer's wife used to love to get us kids and come over. And she'd often leave her house and come over and have meals with us. And not 2 or 3 days before she go back. So when he died, old farmer died, he left about 90,000. You know, he didn't give her a penny. And she worked hard. There wasn't washing. She shared meals with us and grew up. And he died. And left all some dunstons. Anyway, then I went to, of course, on it to work. And the farm was only across the road to us, Tyrigwood's farm. And used to start at 6, because it was dark in February, you know. Start at 6, go across the road, hope them home. And 9 o'clock, we'd have about a quarter of an hour, some food in the field, like bread and cheese. What is it? And then we'd work on till we'd done another piece of bread and cheese till 6 o'clock. We'd work till 6, from 6 till 6. 6 days up till Saturday, all day Saturday. I used to get 6 shilling there. And I used to give my mother 5 and sixpence. And I had sixpence to spend. Well, this sixpence I used to go to East Ham. So it was Tripton's return from here to East Ham Burial, Tripton's. a trip to go to the swimming baths each time. So I used to spend trip and train fare and trip to the bar. That was my weekly return. But before, I was going back a bit, I suppose you can go back. Before going to school, to work, I used to go, on Saturdays, I used to work for my grandfather. He was a greengrocer. And he came, he used to live not far away. I used to go there every Saturday. He used to give me, pay me a shilling. I was going every Saturday, all day long, all around this part. I was going, no, because there's no houses here. You could look from Romford to right to Raynham, 5 miles from the house of any kind here. And I used to go to walk to his house about 4 miles away, and go around with him in a van, this greengrocer and fruit and all that sort of thing. I was going to serve these people in Romford here, the people he knew. And I come home at night, and he'd give me a shilling. It was every, all day Saturday. And his wife was which was a miserable devil, his wife, second wife. And she'd really rough and easy, would you know. Good, I'll go, I'll go, you know, shit away, I've got to go. So, well, you can put this in if you like. Well, pinch his money, it doesn't matter what. Well, he used to keep his money in he had a scales, and the scales were in a box. And he used to keep in a bag, had a lot, there was no paper money then. He'd all his money in the bag, and box. So I said, grandfather, I can say this well. You know, I said, the lady would like to see you. Got some, so of course he's had a bit of ginger beer, and he said he should go round. And well, he got nice to pinch his money, you see, and so anyway, he didn't know. When I got home at night time, I said my shilling, but I didn't dare tell my mother. Of course, she's her father, and my other brothers, the elder one, the sister, we used to share, get his money, hide it. I remember one occasion I bought 15 shillings worth of fireworks. Well, pinch from me. In this money, you get probably 5 shillings or so. We used to hide it. And on Monday, we take it out and send it to school. We share it between us. That went for weeks. So, you know, when I left the job to go to work in the fields, my other brother took it on, next to my sister. So, when he came home the first night, I said, Tom, I said, he keeps his money, he said, in a bag in the scales. So he said, yes, I know, he's found out the first day. It took me about a year to find out. He's found out the first day. Oh, he's a mean man. He gives the old apples he couldn't sell, and I was claiming the old apples to take home to my mother. And said, yes, his own daughter. Anyway, but the funny thing about it, when he died, some years after, I was at the shop of Romford. And he sent to me, on his deathbed, and gave me a gold watch. And I was the only one who saw them, and he thought, the last thing he thought of me. I was the one that did it against him. Oh, no.
How long did you work in the field?
I worked about 3 years, I suppose, just only 3 years like that. And then I while I was there, it wasn't my life, I knew that. I knew I couldn't go through like these other men all their lives working on a farm, I couldn't do that. So I looked around and suddenly I saw a local paper, advertising for they want jobs, you see, situations. So I wrote to them, let everybody know it, and of course I got letters in the back of my mother. My mother saw the letters and opened them. Then I get on to me, see, you be content with the job you've got, she said, not fishing off other people's jobs. You work there, you've got a job, regular job. So anyway, I got this job after 3 years to this, and that's always. It's destroying the big house for Ford Lodge. And
what job was that? Pardon? What was the job doing?
A houseboy, you know, I had to clean the boots. And my best job was, I was to take the pony. He was a businessman. He lived there with his son-in-law. It's a very large house, a very big garden, all about 5 or 6 acres of ground. All cultivated fruit trees and all sorts of lawns. And I had to clean the boots, clean the harness, take them go with them to Dagenham Station, that was 2 miles, in the trap. He used to go to a business in London, and he used to drive there, and I used to have to drive back. And I used to look after the pony and clean it, all that sort of thing. That was my job, chop the wood, and there was no coal there, the wood. I remember him coming down one morning and said, the Saturday, I think he didn't go to business. I was sawing some logs. He said, all I'd done, I'd gone down this barn where the saw was and the loom was, and I always got the Union Jack, it was a paper called Union Jack, they used to have in those days. I was sitting down reading this, and I'll get him coming. I'll shut up and got this. He said, how many lodges have you sawn? So I said, I don't want to be afraid. He said, when I've done this once and two more, I said, done three. I ain't done it. He's the guy. I said, when I've sawn this one and two more, I said, I'm going to be afraid. Anyway, I stopped there for some time, and this guy, now he'd been in the army, and he used to tell me all the tales about India and that sort of thing. His wife is working inside the house, and he did all sorts of jobs there. He's in this garden. Then they had another gardener. Anyway, this fellow had been in the army, and dinner time, when we sit down, he told me all these tales about, you know, not being the truth, but all about India and all these rajahs and all the things he'd never seen. But still, he made out he didn't. God, that's such a job for me. I don't want this job. That. So one morning, I said to go to work. I went up to Dagenham Station, where I saw Dagenham Post Office, where I saw recruits wanted to see in the army. And it's, I always remember this: 30 South Street, East Ham. I'd never been there before in the town. So, So I found the place, South Church Street, and knocked on the door. Woman came to the door, she said, yes. I said, I want to join the army, please. She said, how old are you? So I said, 15. She said, you can't join the army at 15, it'll be 18. So I looked, so down on it, she said, I'll come inside, I'll make you a cup of tea, she said. So first person, so she made this cup of tea, she said, now you stop here till my husband comes home. She said, you talk to him. So shortly afterwards, about an hour later, he came in, a smart looking man with a army uniform on, the khaki cap, you know, yet they used to have a badge down the side with like pieces of ribbon on, so they were recruited. So then if they picked up anything in the street, they gave them a shilling. Once you took the king's shilling, he was in, whatever, you couldn't get out. So anyway, in he came, he said, he looked at me, he said, what have we got here? He said, so he said, you want to join the army? Join the army? He said, join the army? He said, how old are they? 15. He said, well, when you're 18, he said, you come here and see me, and I'll put you in the finest regiment in the British Army. But not before, he said. So I suppose I looked, so then he said, well, he said, stand up against that door. So he stood against the door, he couldn't mark off in inches. So he said, you're a tall boy, you know. He said, I think about 5 feet eight or something. And he said, can you tell a white lie? So I said, I don't know what a white lie is. So he said, can you say you're 17? I said, yes, sir. So he said, right. He said, tomorrow morning you come to me, is it your mother, father, mother-in-law, you haven't got your father. I told her, yeah, she did, but she didn't. And next morning I went up to this house, and he took me off to Stratford, the doctor. So some other fellows, they joined, the recruits had joined up. So when my turn to go in, he said, strip, I took everything off, you know. I'd never done it before in front of anyone, I was a little bit nervous at first. So he said, now hop on your left foot and right foot alternately. They'd done me on every word alternately, what that meant. So I started up easily. He said, the other left at your bloody fall, he said to me. So I thought, I come to the right places. I had never spoken to that before. Anyway, I passed and went to the War Fugitives at Hounslow, Hounslow Heath. You know what they call the Special Reserve. That was five, he did 5 months training.
What did your mother and your friends think of this?
Oh, they were angry about it because I was in the army, couldn't get me out. Well, mother, of course, she's ever angry she was. And she's going to lose money too. But I sent you to send her money. Well, I couldn't get me out. And another boy wanted to join as well, from the name Knight. He said, I'd like to join with us. So I waited outside my house in the early morning before I went to join the club. And he didn't turn up. His mother wouldn't let him go, so I went my own. And that same boy, the name Knight, was killed at Monte de Prue near me in the First World War. He wasn't in the same place, but he killed. I went to relieve in the trenches, and he got killed. So years afterwards. Anyway,
what did people think about the army at this time then? Well, was the army popular, or what did people think
of it?
Not
really, no. Because the only thing that made popular, you wore red your uniform was all red and blue, and you looked smart, really. That's the only attraction, but it didn't attract me so much. It's just men. No, there wasn't many in the army, about one here and there. That's all, but I think they looked upon it as a place where anybody couldn't get a rogues, that's what they joined, and people like that seemed it's entirely different. Well, when I got to Hounslow, doing the 5 months in the Special Reserve, I had to do 5 months, then I had to leave, and if they take me in the rear guard, I mean, there's all the better. I got passed another test, though. I was at Hounslow Heath. It consisted of huts made of cardboard. They weren't wooden huts. The rangers to come in, you know, and a terrible place. There's about hundreds of us, you know, a couple of others, something like that. And
what sort of bedding and huts were inside the huts?
We had just biscuit, army biscuits, and two brown blankets. Nothing. They didn't have the sheets like that. And when the when I got there, with the, I went with another man. He'd been a deserter out of the Navy. He told me all about his man about 25. So when I got there, and I heard this bugle call going, "No, cook." I never heard a bugle call before. So he said, "That's cookhouse." He said, "Is it?" And he says, brought the guard in, and the guard, inside the guard, said, "Go to the stones and get your biscuits." Well, I thought this one to eat. You see, I didn't know. So they gave me three big squares of mattresses at the biscuits. And two brown blankets and a rough old pillow, no pillowcase, nothing like that. And I was there about.
What else were you given? Were you given anything else at that time?
Oh, yes, we've got a union of clothes. All the clothes were taken away, obviously, of course. And we...
What did you get? What clothes were they? What was your uniform?
Oh, khaki. We had a suit of khaki and a suit of white canvas. We drew all our drills in canvas, all our other work in canvas, but the guard did in prey, we did in khaki. And
what was this white canvas? Well, can you describe it?
Yes, it was a... It was a coarse material, very cold white, a suit, you know, pants and stuff. And there goes this white canvas, stiff, hard, not stiff canvas, and a stocking hat, they called it. They had a hat. That was a stocking about 2 feet long, double. So you turned it inside out and made a hat of it. So you had a hat, like a balaclava, and a hat, scarf, and all sorts of things. So we still have to do our fatigue, coal parades and all sorts of things.
What else did they give you besides a uniform?
Oh, we had a canteen and a knife and a spoon. That was all, I think. Knife, spoon, canteen, bits. Yes, that's all. Nothing else. And I bought this barrel cream. See, well, I was the youngest one there. They knew it, not me. They all... the youngest one there was 20-ish, a fellow there. And because they treated me ever so well, though. They kind of all on the... If they could get out of me doing things, they would, or help me.
What about, you mentioned food, you know, the cookhouse corps. What was the food like, and what would happen when meals?
First I'll tell you about the camp suits of canvas. I used to scrub those to get my clothes. I only got a shit in a week, you know, and I'd go to the canteen and buy three bars of fries, chocolate cream, tuppence a bar, and two bottles of ginger beer. That was my shilling a week, and it all went in 1 minute. So for the other money, I was to scrub canvas, and I was to scrub these suits again. That'd be scrubbed and get clean. And they used to give me sixpence for a suit. Fellas did in the barracks, so I had to scrub if I get sixpence for it. And I remember on one occasion we sat in the barracks, and there was a combustible stove that heated the barrack room, where the pipe went up through the wall, as it were, up at the outside, you see. And this fellow wanted his suit of canvas very quickly, so I hung them on this pipe to get them dry, and some bugger come and put the heat on and burnt them. Oh my God, he didn't give me ideas, but I'd burn another suit of canvas. So I burnt it. Anyway, we said the food, we cook house to go. God, there's a stampede. This hut was about 50 yards away, a very long hut, and in it was rows of tables, one side and one table, that side about, I suppose, 20 tables, more, maybe more that side, and 20 tables this side, a passageway between, and four on either side of the table, and four men used to sit on the table, each side of the table, so you've got, say, 20 would be eight in one side, and so much the other side. Well, when the cookhouse went, these fellows, it was a stampede. They didn't get, stop going out the door. If your bed, say, the back room door was in there, and your door was, they clear out the windows, it was nearer. Head first out the window, get there first, you see. And when I got there, the fellow said to me first, he said, "Come on," he said, "come get your food." So I didn't know, so I haven't got this food. All right, is it? All right. So I was thinking, well, because when I went in there, all these tables, and there was four pieces of bread on each side. It was a loaf of bread that was cut in four, and there's four there and four here. And a piece of margarine was smacked on top of it. You brought your own canteen for tea, and your own knife to cut the bread with. There's no... And, of course, after time, I got to know that's what they used to do. They used to be a queue outside, pushing the sergeant inside, saying go, and then they go in for the full over one, they get in the food. And each sailor see that what they do, they if you you sit at the table and say there's four pieces, and there's a piece bigger than there, you, the in there, you would move, you know, go round again, and you wouldn't push up, you wouldn't have that big, there'd be bigger bread. So he said, what they used to do, they used to, when the old sergeant wasn't looking, they'd pinch one of these pieces back there again, and put their knife and stick it in, and knock it under the table. So it held the bread and margarine held under the table, this knife holding it. The old sergeant come along and said, because you was allowed to take your bread and eat it out the back there, what they never worried about, it. You've got your knife, you take it, pick up the bread and go. Eat it where you like, outside if you want it to. The old sergeant come along and said, where's the bread gone, do you see? So they say, the man take it out, sergeant. You sure, he say? I say, yes, sergeant. See, and as soon as he got me to put it on the side and have it divided among three, so we had three small bread and three small, and that often went on. But otherwise, well, food was nothing. We dinner, we for tea, like the.
Which breakfast would the bread one have been? Would that which meal would the bread have been? Or was that an all meal? That was breakfast. Would you not get anything else for breakfast?
No, nothing else. Once a week, we got a piece of cake for tea, but that's all. Anyway, breakfast, nothing but that. And you had your own canteen, and the men would come on what they called mess orderlies with a tea pail. It was a very bright tea pail about a height. It'd be about 10 or 20 feet with this pail, with a spout. And you used to have to say, yeah, the basin. You didn't have the basin. They provided a big pudding basin, you know, no handle anything to it. And you come along and took the tea out, seeing there's one between two. So there's two basins, one at each side. And of course, yeah, the fellow was bigger than you, and because he grabbed it first. And many times, hey, what about me? And put out his end. Because you had the grouts. See, the grouts, he had the tea. That's all we got, tea. A basin of tea, but one between two, and a piece of this bread and margarine. Well, that's every breakfast, never altered.
What about dinner? What
dinner, well, when dinner comes up, there's always a stew. Nothing else. These come along with a big Dixie, and they come with these Dixies with all greasy stew. Oh, this horrible, greasy fat. Oh, I hate this fat. Come along, great lumps of fat it would be, and you could be a canteen full, you know. Later, it out, get a canteen full. That's all you've got, canteen full stew.
No bread with that meal.
Pardon?
No bread with that meal.
No bread with it. No, it's just that. And of course, the fellas could eat fat, and there's nothing, because the table were bare, you know, there's nothing. There. All this fat meat can be shut on the table. These food, they could always put it, no plates in there. So when they left, when they finished, the table scattered with great lumps of fat or whatever. Along would come a fellow. You couldn't get them all, and they got this one canteen. Along would come a fellow with a big broom and a big metal container. And he'd get on the table with a stiff broom and sweep all this into all the fat. That's how you clear the table. Sweep it with a dirty old broom, sweep it off into a container. And that used to go to the, what they call the hog bin for the people who used to get for pigs. Well, that's all he got then. Tea time, you got more bread, and then on the Wednesday, you've got a little piece of cake.
And that's it?
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing else, whatever.
Would you get tea with your dinner and your tea as well?
No tea midday. Oh, no, nothing midday. Tea at breakfast and meal. Because the fellas just spend their money over canteen with cups of tea, and because I had no money, I couldn't have someone they'd buy me one. But that went on for these 5 months ago. I say, that's a good to me, and on that one occasion, see, I did guard duty, and I had a big enough carry hold of a rifle. There's bigger rifles in those days, long, what they call Longley Enfield, and the bayonet on top was about as long as that, so nobody could hardly carry the damn thing. And I said, guard duty, I was on there, and the entrance to this Hounslow Heath, there's a big gate with a man on guard on the gate that led out to the main Hounslow Road. And at the time I was there, Christmas of 1908, about that time, there was a boxing match. A fellow named Jack Johnson was this great boxer. He'd come, he was knocking everybody out in America, and they'd touch him. And there was a man called Burns, Tommy Burns, he's Canadian. He's a 12 stone, well, Johnson was about 15 to 16, man's fellow. And Burns held the championship before Johnson appeared on the scene. So Johnson was after it, he won the world championship, you see. So he's chased Miss Burns everywhere, from, of course, Canada to America, came to England. I remember when he came to England, Burns shot off to Australia to dodge him. Well, he caught up with him in Australia, Burns, and they had to fix up the fight. Well, everybody's talking about this fight, so you know, everybody, about Johnson, he'd been chasing him so long. So this particular, it took place on Boxing, the night before Boxing, this night, number 8. So I was on guard duty around there, about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I suppose, it was dark. And a fellow came along, half drunk, you know, he said, come up the leer, and he said, do you know who won the fight? Well, I didn't take my own lead, I'd just taken place for a while, I knew. So I said, no, he said, Johnson won it, he said, in six rounds, not about 6 rounds, no, 12 rounds. And for 6,000 pounds, he got 6,000, win, lose or draw, what's his name, he got 6,000, whether he won, lose or the fight. I don't know what Johnson's share of it, Johnson beat him. And this fellow, when I got back to the barrack room next morning, that was like Johnson had not burned out in the 12th round for 6,000. Now, that man told me that in the middle of a boxing day morning. So how he got there, he must have, he didn't know, couldn't have known. That's what he said.
What sort of men were there, your fellow recruits?
Oh, they were all good to me. But they are much older, of course, mostly. Well, I had one wag, I called him. He was about 20-ish. He's the next youngest. That was about 25, some were 30 in the barrack room. I remember I was there, I said, like, I'll get your name, Wag, I called him Wag. He said, have a bed next to me, and I was friendly with him, he's doing anything for me, you know. So I was there one day, and two men came to his barrack room, men filled me hats, that sort of thing. He said, called out his name, so the son's over there. So he said, come on, I want you, they said. So I went to his place, took him off. I found out that the weekend he'd been to London on the Sunday's leave, and they broke into the Barclay Hotel in London, a big hotel, and knocked out the commissionaire and pinched his money. And I never saw more of that.
Were there many men like that?
Many what?
Men like that, you know, the rougher sort, perhaps.
Yes. The first night I was there, they, because they all spend money in the canteen of these men, boozing, they all come home drunk because they frighten the life out of me. I'd never seen one like it before. And I was in his bed in the third barrack room. And these two men come swearing and shouting, and they had a fight. And one fellow knocked the other one over to army beds. He had been knocked over this fellow, knocked him out. They sent for the police. It was my first night there. Sent for the police sergeant, the police sergeant. And he came, he said, who's fighting? And he said, I forget what I said. So-and-so didn't finish it, he said, walked out. And next morning, they wanted to kiss my mother. A friend, he thought more of it. It was my first night there. But yes, there was lots of...